Hello, I'm Connor, and this is I've Got Guts. Lauren is my mom, and Stephanie is my aunt room. This is a podcast about living and thriving with chronic illnesses. Let's be real. It's really hard, but it doesn't have to be. You are not alone. With this podcast, we want to create a community and a space to be able to talk about the tough stuff and laugh along the way. The idea for this podcast stemmed from Mama and Aunt Room trying to find one to listen to for themselves and not being able to find the one that made them feel sad or frustrated. Their goal is to talk about the hard stuff, but also talk about how to get through it, to be positive, have a full and productive life, and thrive. But before we get started, Mom and Aunt Room are not medical professionals. They are just sharing their stories with you.
And that was Scooch.
taking over our intro on the podcast. He sounds so adorable. And we hired him.
He's hired. We felt strongly that he needed to do that intro after last week, if you listened, and Lauren talked about, well, unicorn uterus.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it's called, actually.
Neither do I. I just call it a unicorn uterus, but we just felt... It just, when we were done and I was sharing that podcast or that part on the podcast with you, I looked at Room and I'm like, I feel like we got to have Connor on. Like,
yes.
I said, he's my miracle. He really is a true miracle. And here we are 9 years later and
having that little miracle do our podcast intro.
Exactly. I think his favorite part, if you notice, excellent reading, buddy. I'm so proud of you. But you could see at the end, he got really excited when he was like, Mom and Aunt Room are not medical.
Yeah.
He was real excited to let everybody know we are not doctors, and he is correct.
I love him.
So we wanted to share a little piece of Connor with all of you. All right. Thorns and roses time.
Okay.
Room, do you want to go first?
Are we doing thorns first,
let's do
thorns. We just always get them out of the way.
Out of the way. Good strategy.
I have two big ones this week.
Okay.
Again, sorry guys, my fertility journey is just taking over my life, but we were supposed to start our first IUI cycle on Tuesday, but we went to the doctor and they're like, you know, my body was being a jerk again and they're like, let's run some blood work. So they ran some blood work and the blood work came back and turns out I have hypothyroidism. So like, you had it years ago.
Here we go, back to our bodies copying each other.
I have to have it. So I did have to go on medicine for that. And we have to, like, you know, just keep track of things until my next cycle. And hopefully the numbers go down, hopefully. So that really put a damper on this week. And then I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I got a little bit of a cold on Friday. And it's definitely ruined my whole weekend. We had to cancel plans with our friends Keegan and Taryn, and I was really looking forward to seeing them. So just a lot of health-related thorns in my side this week.
Oh, but it's always the worst when we don't feel good.
I know.
It really is. So my thorn this week, I would say, it took me a minute. I couldn't find a thorn. I was just saying.
Which is a good problem to have.
Before we started recording today, I'm like, what is my thorn? I really had a search. But honestly, overall, I am such a doer and I'm always on the go, trying to do a million things. And I never actually like really sit down. And last week was nuts. I barely got any sleep and towards the end of the week, my face was like numb. And I know when my face starts to go numb that I am lacking sleep and I'm not taking care of me. So that was my thorn this week. I need to remember to take care of myself and put up those boundaries and make sure that I'm taking care of me. So self-care is so important because we can't pour from an empty cup, right?
Yeah, I feel like every time I talk to you in the morning on the way to work, you're like, I was up till 1 o'clock in the morning last night. I'm like, what are you doing with your life?
Just so many things. Just twitting around. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
All right, what's your rose?
Oh, my rose is a really good one, and it actually has to do with this podcast. So a listener reached out to us on our social media pages, and I responded to her personally, and she and I spent the whole day yesterday chatting. She has a diagnosis of ineffective esophageal motility, which I will be talking about today. And we were just able to really like connect and share some strategies, and and like just give each other hope. As much as I'm the one doing this podcast trying to give hope to people, I still sometimes need that hope back, you know?
Yeah, reflected back to you. Absolutely.
So it was just so nice to connect her. So Jenna, if you were listening to this, I really appreciated our conversation yesterday. I'm so glad that for a minute I was able to help you feel like you aren't alone in your journey.
I love that so much. I love, and that's exactly what we set out to do. That was our intention for this podcast, is to create that community and be there for each other. And it just makes my heart so happy.
I know. The fact that it's already happening and we've only put out, you know, 1.5 episodes makes me beyond excited.
Imagine what we're going to be able to do like years from now, how many people we can reach. So makes my heart so happy.
All right. So let's let you kick things off today, because I feel like you've got some, not funny, but some funny stories. Mine are definitely not funny. So
yes, I definitely have some funny stories. And oh, my rose. I didn't say my rose.
Rose.
Oh my, we're so excited to tell my funny stories today. Okay, so my rose was going home to see Sean's side of the family. We did our Thanksgiving and we went home for my niece's birthday. And we never really get to go to see her for her birthday, just because November is such a tricky time. Yeah. So just filled my cup. It was so great to see everybody. And we were back here super early today because Connor had a hockey game. But I just go back to always like take the trip, do the things, even if it's like you're cramming a lot into a small amount of time. It's just so worth it. So
especially for those girls.
I know.
They love you so much. They love you guys.
Love you,
so
ladies.
Much.
All right. So this week, I'm going to kick things off with some intestinal distress.
good way to put it.
From the words of our old gastro, Dr. Kim, I've got a crazy colon. And it started rearing its ugly, ugly head many years ago. I was actually having just some lower, very intense abdominal pain, and it would not let up. And I went to my gastro, and he literally, Dr. Kim was like, you got to go to the ER. This sounds like an appendix. So went to the ER and had all the tests and all the blood work, and everything was coming up normal.
Yes, shocker.
Are we seeing a trend here in our stories? So frustrating. And it's not that I wanted something to be wrong, but I just wanted answers to why I wasn't feeling well. And I just knew in my gut, you know this,
yes,
when we know something
knew.
Is wrong, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just have like my past of being that undiagnosed celiac and everybody saying there was nothing wrong with me, but I didn't feel good. So I just carry that with me anytime I don't feel well. And I'm like, well, doctors didn't get it right for like majority of my childhood.
Yep.
What are they missing now? So it's, you know, that story of, and those memories just kind of come up often. So anyway, so Dr. Kim, after that whole experience of the ER, they sent me home because it was nothing of emergency nature, but I still was not feeling good. So Dr. Kim got me in for a colonoscopy, and this is kind of funny. He legit could not get the scope into my body because my colon was spasming so bad, so bad. And I just remember waking up and he was like, you've got a crazy colon. I'm like, oh boy. And it's really hard to diagnose anything with like spasms because a lot of these tests, they're images. So you're not seeing it happen live. Mm-hmm. Like he went to put that scope up in there and couldn't get it in.
You were having a spasm.
I was legit spasming when he was trying to go in there. So I walked out of there with answers, which made me feel better because I knew there was something. I knew what was causing the pain. I had a spastic colon. And a spastic colon is basically irregular contractions of the muscles in your intestines. So you can have colon spasms for like acute reasons or acute reactions to maybe like an infection or a food intolerance. Some people have chronic colon spasms that could be related to like an underlying condition. So it's usually connected with something. And a lot of times people with IBS can have colon spasms. Have you ever?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you have.
I get esophageal spasms more than colon spasms, but when I do get a colon spasm, it is not fun.
Yes, yeah.
And it's rare though for me.
Right, right. And see, and that's what I kind of did some research around spastic colon, and they said a lot of times it's connected with IBS, but sometimes people with IBS don't even have it at all. So it just shows everybody's bodies are so different, you know, and unique. But I was given medicine to help stop the spasms, which I still take to this day. And I gave my digestive tract that like rest for a couple of days. I did the our favorite, that clear liquid diet. It's always a good one, but it really always gets the job done. Don't you agree? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes when you just do clear liquids and pause and let things kind of just rest and heal, it just, that helped in stopping those spasms. And I think it was about 2 weeks and they finally got under control. And honestly, now I just take meds at night for it proactively. Yeah. And I really don't have a problem with the spastic
colon. Yeah, I'll say, when was the last time you even had an episode?
Honestly, it's been years. It's been years.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it too is exercise. So for me, running kind of helps just regulate my whole digestive tract and keeps things moving the way it's supposed to be, not in an irregular way. So that coupled with the meds and just taking care of myself has helped some.
Good.
All right, so I just looked down at her notes. This is a crazy one for you, I feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah, and I feel like I've monopolized the last couple of episodes. I promise after this one, my heavy-duty stories will be over. Thank God.
I know. It's like almost just like reliving it all again. But then really as you're is. Saying it, and I'm looking at where you are now and today,
yeah.
You've come so far.
Really, though.
I'm just so proud of your digestive tract.
Thanks.
Working so hard.
Maleficent says thank you. For those of you who don't know, I've named my digestive tract Maleficent because she's evil.
Okay, I love that. You name your cars, you name your digestive tract. I feel like I think of mine as just this volcano.
A volcano.
Is there it going go. To erupt
Mount,
today?
Is there, what's a famous volcano? I don't really know.
Oh, I'm the worst.
Mount Vesuvius.
Yeah. Okay. I could name it that. Will there be an eruption today?
You never know.
Will it be upper or lower?
Oh my God. Okay. So this one's heavy. It's a couple things mixed into one for me. But before I get into it, I did have something sad happen to me right after I was diagnosed with my ineffective esophageal motility. That amazing doctor that I loved, her husband got a job in Oregon and she had to leave the practice.
Oh my God, I remember you called me crying, like literally crying that day. I thought somebody died. I'm like, what's going on? My guest was moving. I was like, oh,
I was
no.
so heartbroken. She was like, we said this the last time, you actually made me say it twice. She treated me like a person and not a patient. So like, she never made me feel like I was crazy. She listened to me and she did everything in her power to actually help me. And I really have not been able to find that since her, which is sad. But anyway, right before she left, she had a gut feeling and she sent me for a SIBO test. And for those of you who don't know, SIBO is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And it's a condition where there's an abnormal increase in the amount of bacteria in the small intestine. And this can happen when the small intestine doesn't move food along quickly enough and it allows bacteria to grow and remain for too long. So
it's like, it's almost like food is kind of like essentially rotting in there.
Basically, yeah. So this didn't shock me that I had it because my gastroparesis quite literally causes food to sit and rot inside of me for days and days. Now, this test I hate, but it's because the day before this test,
oh gosh,
all you can eat is black coffee, white rice, broth, and like chicken with no seasoning on it.
That is like, not the best combination.
And so I don't know. I think I covered this in my gastroparesis episode, but like I can't drink water. Water and me are not friends. Water fills me up almost immediately. Like 3 sips of water, I've got the whole ocean swimming inside of me. So I starve usually on that day before. Like my poor husband has seen me have a nervous breakdown. So I'm like, I just want a sip of juice. I just want juice. I can't have it.
I know.
So it's the day before that's really bad. And then really you go in for the day of the test and you just like chug sugar water, which for me, after having had nothing the day before, that glucose drink is like, I'm like, oh, this is delicious. I must be the only person on the face of the earth that feels that way. And then you blow into a bag every 20 minutes for like 4 hours.
Yes, I've done that test as well.
Yeah. So fun.
So fun.
The test results came back. I didn't have SIBO. And I was like, yes, good news.
Finally.
But that quickly was swept away because she told me that I had IMO. So for those of you who don't know what IMO is, it is intestinal methionine overgrowth. And it's a condition where there is an excess of methanogenic archaea in the gastrointestinal tract.
I'm so proud of you for how you're pronouncing these, because I don't know if I could.
Some big words there. So So there, it's basically an archaea, and I'm probably saying it wrong. It's a type of microbe that produces methane in the digestive tract. So I basically got SIBO's evil twin brother.
Of course you did.
So my body is producing methane gas. Like, I just, sometimes when I say it out loud, I'm like, what the hell? Are you kidding me?
I'm just over here laughing because it really does sound crazy.
Like, dude, the smells that came out of me were otherworldly. Like, I don't even know how else to describe it. And who knows how long I had it, because if you remember, my SIBO test was actually pushed back almost a year because of the antibiotics I had to take for my thrush and COVID and all of that. So I probably had this methane gas inside of me for like a year.
You're just like producing this.
Like, if someone lit a match near me, I probably could have blown up. Like, who knew? And methane gas can be really super harmful to your insides, and it can cause even more damage to your nerves and your intestines. So guess what I had to go on to fix it?
Oh, no.
Antibiotics.
Not again.
So the thing that got me in this hole, I had to take to get out of this hole. I'll never understand it.
Crazy.
And it was a pretty controversial treatment, because the combination of the two antibiotics they have to put you on wipes your entire gut biome clean. So it could have gone two ways for me. That could have been like great. That could have been what my body needed, or it could have gone like really bad.
Right.
So I actually took a minute to decide if it was the right thing to do. Like, I was scared to make any medical decisions after everything that was going wrong for me.
Right. Yes. It's like you almost become paralyzed because the decision you're making could lead you on a great path or a not so great path.
Exactly. But in the end, I decided, like, I have to get rid of this stuff. It was harming me each and every day. So I did it. I had to take 5 pills a day. They were the size of a small toe. Each one of them.
A small toe. Are you referring to your big toe or like pinky toe?
I don't know. Like, I'd say, like, I don't know, maybe the second one in from the right. I don't know. It was the size of a toe. It's not good. For someone who has disrupted swallowing or no swallowing at all, like, it was terrifying. And I had to do it for 2 weeks. They tore me up on the inside. Like, it hurt to swallow them. And I could feel them moving through each part of my digestive tract. Like, I'd be like, ooh, there it is. There it is. I feel, oh, nope, no, it's over here. Like, I could feel it.
The journey.
The journey of the pill. And then when I would stop feeling them, time for the next dose. It's fun. And then I had to do another breath test to ensure that it was gone. So, and in the midst of all of this, I did end up having to go to the ENT because the pain from that one endoscopy was still like happening.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And no one can figure out what was wrong. So he did diagnose me with LPR, which, let's see if I can say this one.
This is a long guy.
Laryngopharyngeal reflux.
You are on fire with pronouncing things today.
I hope that was right. Otherwise known as LPR, which is silent reflux, and it's a condition that occurs when stomach contents flow back up into the throat and voice box. And this happens when the muscle at the end of the esophagus doesn't close properly. And symptoms are like hoarseness in your voice. Mm-hmm. You feel like you have something stuck in your throat. You have a cough, a lot of mucus, trouble swallowing, chronic sore throat, laryngitis. So, like, a lot of these symptoms just kind of were blending in with what else was going on.
And can't you get, like, upper respiratory infections? Like, can it, like...
Yes, which I was getting, like...
All the time.
All the time. And the doctor was like, there's not much I could do for you. He's like, we would normally put you on a PPI, a proton pump inhibitor, which I was already on the highest dose of that. And he just sent me on my way and told me I had to deal with it. He was like, talk to your gastro. My gastro was like, talk to the ENT. I was like, all right, you know what?
They're just passing the baton
to you guys. I'll figure this out on my own. And that's the case 99% of the time. The doctor's like, there's nothing we could do for you. Figure it out on your own, which we end up doing, you and I. But that's sad that that's the case.
That's hard to hear and it's frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always the doctor's fault. Like, these doctors are being slammed with requirements for how many patients they need to see. And, like, if they don't fit in a certain amount, like, they get in trouble for it. So it's really not their fault. But the problem with how that is affecting patients is you're not giving people the time and resources they truly need to heal.
Right.
When you do that to them.
Yeah.
But on a good note, I was actually feeling okay at this point, and I was able to take another trip down to Florida.
Ah, going to see Michael and Piper.
Yeah, and it was glorious. I floated in a pool. I feel like I remember that trip. My brother was like, I was looking around the house for you, and I couldn't find you, and I look outside, and you're just like laying on a float with a pina colada, blasting country music, and just like living your best life. I'm like, yes, that is what I needed.
Little things.
I got to go maid of honor dress shopping with Piper. My brother cooked me the best scallops I've ever eaten in my life.
Ooh, I love a good scallop. I love it when they're not chewy.
He nails it. He's good. He'll have to share his secrets with you. But again, we have to take these opportunities and soak them in when you can. Michael and Piper's home became my, like, getaway from when I was sick.
A little oasis for you, right?
Yes. So this was July 2021, and I actually felt pretty good for quite some time after this. So I went from July to November feeling okay, which that's a streak at that point.
That is an amazing streak.
You just counted on your fingers.
I just counted on my fingers over here, third grade teacher.
It's true, though. It's about 5 months that I was feeling okay. And my version of okay is a lot different than other people's. Like, I still had flares. They were just tame. And I still had pain. I just dealt with it. I still had limited eating hours. I still could only eat safe food. So, like, when I tell people, I'm doing good, that doesn't mean I'm healed. That just means I still had to follow my protocols, you know what I mean?
Right.
But then around Thanksgiving, I started to not do so hot. I don't even know. Swallowing was getting hard again. Every time I ate, I had a really wet cough, which made me nervous. And every time I eat, it was like painful. I was bloated and nauseous, and not like regular bloated and nauseous. I always say it's like the Hunger Games version.
That's like a great analogy.
Like, just like everything inside of me is in this battle with President Snow, and like my belly was descended so far out. People were like, "Are you expecting more than one baby?" I'm like, "No.
The only baby I'm expecting is a poop baby."
Exactly. Please. And it was hard as a rock. Like, you could literally, like, knock on my stomach and hear it down the street. It's bad. The nausea was terrible, too. I was, like, you know, when you get really nauseous, I was, like, drooling from both sides of my mouth. Like, everything tasted like metal. I felt like I was blowing fire out of my ears. And it went on like this for a while. And eventually I was like, you know what? Enough is enough. It was painful. It was unbearable. It was torture, really. And this is when my doctor started kind of going bonkers on me. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, they wanted an answer, you know? So there's just one doctor was like, "Oh, it's your muscles." So she put me on a muscle relaxer. And the next doctor was like, "Oh, it's COVID," which it wasn't. The next one just actually thinks that I've lost my mind. But eventually my primary care doctor came through for me, and she got me in for a pharyngogram. Pharyngogram. I'm saying it right.
Basically, nice job. That was a good job on that one.
And this was way ahead of schedule. They wanted me to wait like 6 months. She got me in within a week.
Oh, wait, that is a dream. I love that.
Yeah. She was like, "We're not messing around." So basically, I had to eat barium, which it's like chalky stuff they use to contrast things during an X-ray.
But different than the, what'd you have to eat that one time? Radioactive eggs?
Yeah. Way different than radioactive eggs. Okay. And then we got to, like, watch my skeleton swallow food. I got to watch it, too. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. And so they give it to you in all different textures. So they give it to you in, like, something that you have to really chew and swallow. They give it to you in, like, a mushy form. They give it to you in a liquid form. So, and then I watched my little skeleton, like, try and get it down. And I could even see my poor skeleton struggling. I was like, "Oh, you poor thing." I'm like, "Wait, that's me."
It's my body.
Yeah, so basically that test showed that my ineffective esophageal motility was worse than we suspected.
So devastating.
Yeah. So my esophagus was basically just being a lazy piece of shit. Anyways, so
get it together, esophagus.
Get it together. So foods and liquids were like clinging to my esophagus for dear life. They're like, please don't let us fall into that pit of rotting food in her stomach. So like, that's what was going on inside of me.
The war carries on.
I don't blame them. I would have done the same thing. So I had to go back to square one, like soft foods, chew them to a pulp, liquids with each bite. And like that fills you up so fast. I already have a condition where like I get full fast.
Yeah.
Once I had to start adding in bite of food, sip a liquid, forget it. Right. I made it through like six bites total when I was full, but it is what it is. I went from yummy sandwiches to instant mashed potatoes for lunch. Mm-hmm. Just so exciting and delicious.
And soft.
Oh, my God. But then that didn't work either. And more symptoms crept in on me. And the bloat was back and the pain was back. And my current gastro assumed that I had IMO again. And I had to go back on those toe-sized pills again. She not was again. Like, she basically was like, I'm not going to do the test again. And I think this was also another effect of COVID. Like, they just weren't doing a lot of that testing at that time. Mm-hmm. So she just put me on the pills again. And I had no relief, so I went from February to March, and then I got hit with a flare, and this was a bad one. So I woke up, like, violently throwing up every 30 minutes from about 3 a.m. to 8 a.m., but then that was it.
So bizarre.
It's not normal for me.
Yeah.
So I assume my body just needed to, like, eject something that was sitting there. Well, woke up the next morning getting violently ill, but this time it wasn't throwing up. It was pooping.
Yeah.
And again, this was like every 30 minutes from 3 a.m. to 8 a.m., but then I was okay by the afternoon.
Such a weird pattern.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I still need to eject things, you know? And then I woke up Wednesday getting sick again, but this time, like, it felt like my body was trying to perform an exorcism on itself.
Oh, that's always joyful.
Yeah. And then it felt like my body was trying to eject anything I'd put in it for, like, the last several months. It's just like, get out, get out, get out.
Caution, closed,
yeah.
Sign.
I'm not kidding you. Every single time I ingested something, I literally could have taken a sip of Gatorade and nibbled a corner off of a saltine. It violently exited my body, like 6 minutes later, violently.
It was like, really, you were not ready to receive legitimately anything.
No, like I could not move from my bed. If I moved, I got sick. And so I tried to stay in bed all day to avoid, like, angering anything, but it wasn't going away. So I messaged my doctor, and she thought it would be smart to do infectious disease testing on my stool.
Did they have to wear, like, one of those suits, those hazmat suits?
No, actually, they bring, like, you go pick up the kit, you know, you bring it home, you collect the stool sample, and then I couldn't drive, so I had to call my dad. And his face when he carried that poop out of the house, he was like holding it by the very tippy tippy edge.
Oh, what your like, dad won't do for you.
I was like, you want a mask or like you want a hazmat suit? I can get you a beekeeper suit, maybe.
There you go. Wear some white gloves.
Oh my God. So funny. But then the next day it was like, equally as horrible, if not worse, for me. I reached out to the doctor's office again because I was concerned at this point. Like, the stuff that was coming out of me, I don't even know if I have words to describe what it looked like. Like,
oh God.
It was clear and slimy. It looked like a fish that you see in, like, the depths of the ocean that no one can actually reach.
Oh, that sounds nasty.
It wasn't normal. I think I took a picture of it, but now I think I deleted it. So I was just like, no one's going to believe me. It was awful. And the smell. I don't know that I could ever describe the smell. It's like, it's just, it's unlike anything I've ever smelled in my entire life. And I've never smelled anything like it since. It was a very unique smell. really bad. So at this point, I'm like, okay, I haven't eaten or drank anything in basically a week, because every time I tried, it violently exited my body. I was like barely moving at this point. So I called the gastro's office and she's like, all right, you got to go to the ER. Like, you need fluids at least at this point.
Right. Like, you're barely eating. You're right. Getting sick. You're going to be you're dehydrated.
Right. So by the time I get to the hospital, the doctor gets the test results. I have C. diff.
Oh, goodness. Now, define C. diff for our viewers, our listeners.
Well, I think I have it in here somewhere. Oh,
gosh. It just sounds scary. Yeah. It sounds scary.
Yes. I have it in here in our notes somewhere. I think I'm going to get to what C. diff is, but it's basically just a bacteria that can cause diarrhea and colitis. Like, it's an inflammation of the colon. That doesn't do it justice. Like,
people treat it. Like, if you're in the hospital, didn't they treat you like you were really contagious? Is it right?
You'd think. Bad hospital experience. So I was really out of it at this point. Like, I don't know if I even fully processed what was happening. It was post-COVID days, so they wouldn't let my dad stay with me in the ER. I was by myself, and they didn't actually consider me a high priority, even though I'm, like, highly contagious.
Right. At this point. Crazy. Yeah. And I guess it's going back to how crazy it was during COVID times.
Yeah.
In the health world.
So I sat in that waiting room for 7 hours.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't eat or drink anything because I was so afraid of it violently exiting my body in an ER waiting room.
No.
Oh, my God. I was dizzy. Like, I was seeing spots. I was in so much pain. Like, pain I could never describe. It was, I mean, I guess if I had to try and describe it, it's like someone had taken all of my internal organs and started running them through an incinerator while simultaneously smashing them with a sledgehammer.
Okay, that gives us a crystal clear picture.
That's what it felt like. And I'll be honest, this is one of the worst ER experiences of my life. I feel like you always have good ER experiences and mine are always like awful.
I know, you're so right. You're so right.
So I take nausea medicine. I have a prescription for promethazine, which is also known as Phenergan, because of my debilitating nausea. So as soon as they got me back finally into like a bed, I was like, I'm going to die. I need my nausea medicine. And they were like, would not give it to me. They gave me Zofran, which they might as well have given me a Skittle. Like, Zofran doesn't do anything for me.
Right. Especially when your body is used to a stronger type of med. You know?
And then I asked for a pillow to raise my head a little because of the nausea. No pillow. I asked for a blanket because I was cold. Nothing. So I had to use my sweatshirt and sweatpants as an extra pillow and my winter jacket as a blanket. Like, I just, and it took me hours to see a doctor. Hours.
Crazy.
And then she gave me my nausea medicine after hours. Like, thank you for, why am I here?
Right. I'm supposed to be here to get some answers and at least get some relief.
Yeah. Oh, and are you ready for this one?
Oh, gosh.
My blood work looked great.
Here we go again. It's looking all sorts of normal.
I was like, and I said to her, I go, I always wonder, does my blood work look great because I've been living with these things for so long that my body has just adapted to dehydration and malnutrition and it's just the norm for my body? Like, maybe we should look beyond the blood work.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Not like you're a doctor or anything, but you do know your body. It comes back to knowing your body, right? Mm.
Yes. And it did help that I knew my body so well and I caught it quick. Like, she said that people usually go weeks before realizing or catching it. And I only went 4 days that I know of, although I'm sure it was probably a little bit longer than it was brewing inside of me.
Right.
The running theory for that one is that for about a year, I was just given antibiotic after antibiotic. And they were intense ones too, like all the ones for the IMO and the, thrush.
Right. You're not talking about just like amoxicillin. Right. Like, you're talking about intense antibiotics.
If you think about it, throughout all that time, I was getting strep throat like couple times a year. Yes, so add those antibiotics in as well.
You were just like, you were just morphing into an antibiotic at this rate.
Yeah, it's literally turning into one. So, but that is what caused the C. diff. And I can't tell you how many times I cried that night. I just wanted like home. I would have even taken like my mom or dad just being there just to hold my hand. Yes. Like any kind of comfort is awful. But they finally let me go home around 4 a.m. with another antibiotic.
But wait, I thought antibiotics can cause this. This is like so crazy to think about. It can cause it, but then you also get one to treat it.
Yeah.
It's this vicious cycle.
It really is. And C. diff is an intense and dangerous toxin for normal people, but for someone whose digestive tract is partially paralyzed, my healing journey wasn't easy. The pills they had me on made me exhausted. I had to take 4 of them a day. Like, I was bloated. I looked like I was pregnant with quintuplets. Like, I could barely function. But I'm very lucky, and I was surrounded by so many people who were willing to just jump in and help whenever I needed it. Like, my mom and dad, you and Sean, my friend Amanda were, like, the ones who were on standby locally. And then I had, like, my lovelies, who are my best friends from college, and my brother and Piper calling me and keeping my spirits up or texting me to check in. And that's actually the week my dad was like, I have a project to do in your house. And I was like, okay. And I think he just like redid my pantry so he could be here and supervise me because I was not in good shape.
No, and you're all by yourself here.
Yeah. And I got to be honest, like C. diff really changed my perspective on a lot of things. Like I genuinely thought I was going to die. And I don't mean to sound morbid, but it was the scariest thing I've ever gone through. And it was painful. And I honestly wouldn't wish it on anyone ever. Like I walked out of that a whole new person. And because of that, I think I was led to my person.
Do tell. So, I'm over here making heart signals.
Not even a full month after I went through all of that, Anthony, my now husband, messaged me. And he messaged me saying that he had read my blog. So I do have a blog, and it's actually where we got the name for this podcast from. And it was just my way of, I needed that relief. I needed to put my story out there. Like, holding it in was doing me no good. You know what I mean?
Right. You got to express and release those feelings.
Yes. And he was floored by my honesty and my strength. And I think him reaching out and saying that was what I had been waiting for someone to say to me for so long. So I took a chance. I went out on that first date. And the rest is history.
I can still remember that day. Yeah. Like, it was yesterday when you went on that date. Mm-hmm. She went, and then we had a little code. Like, you would text me what? Like, red
if it was really bad. Yellow if it was, like, text me in, like, 20 minutes. And right. Green if everything was good.
Yeah, so I get, like, the green text. And they just went to, like, get tea or something. Yeah. Like, super cozy, chill. And she texted green, but, like, time kept going by. It was, like, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12
o'clock. You wanted that update.
I'm like, I need an update. I'm like, she's either really having the best time of her life or she's been abducted. Like, what is happening here? Well, obviously, she was not abducted, and here we are today. Anthony's our producer.
Yes.
Right? That's his title? Yes. Producer.
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 He genuinely loves me regardless of how broken I am, and he takes care of me, and he never makes me feel ashamed or guilty for how I'm feeling, and I hit the jackpot on this one.
You did.
C. diff sucked, but it changed my perspective on things, and it led me to be more open to things that were coming my way, and because of that, I got myself a husband.
I love it. You know what? It has me thinking about something that I journal about all the time, and I'll write this phrase, and it's, I trust and know that the right people always make their way into my life. They always do, and they always will. And I think that's just, if we have that perspective and just trust that you're surrounded by people who are going to uplift you and that you're going to connect with, and look, you got a husband out of it.
A good one.
It was definitely the right, that was definitely the right person. So, and I think that it can be tricky to be the spouse or your partner and when they have a chronic illness, and that can be really tricky. So he knew what he was getting into.
He did know, and he still loves me.
Well, Sean, my husband, did not know he was marrying broken digestive tract, but, you know.
He still loves you.
He still loves me anyway. Here we are all these years later. Well, we're going to close things out today with an accessory organ.
An accessory organ story, my favorite.
Here we go. Okay, so let me take you back to the summer of 2013. My teammate at school, I teach with Heather, and obviously it was summer, but we were facilitating a workshop for other teachers at BOCES. And I woke up that morning, and mind you, I think we had 2 sessions. So I was going to be there all day. It was like a 9 to 3 thing. We were running 2 different sessions, and we're facilitating it. So it wasn't like I was sitting consuming. I was presenting. So I woke up that morning and I was feeling just like really off. Like I knew something was not right. I'm like, oh, I can't be having a bad stomach day. Like you know those days.
Yeah.
Where you just wake up, you're like, not today. Like the unknown of where was it going to be the bathroom? How far was it from the room? All these thoughts are in my mind thinking about how I'm going to get through this day. And I go to Heather, I pick her up, and I really can't even begin to express how grateful I am to her because I teach with someone who's so compassionate and so understanding to me and all of my health issues over the years. And this was just yet another example of that. Mm-hmm. She's like, I got you. You know, I'll take most of the lead. Jump in when you can. If you need to sit. Like, she was so wonderful. And I honestly, I don't know how I would get through some days at school if it wasn't for Heather. So I love my teamie. She's always there. So anyway, we get through it. I teach through the pain. And I remember just being like, what is this? Like, what is going on? And it just, throughout the day, it just kept progressively getting worse. Like, I was going to the bathroom a lot, and I was nauseous, and I was having pain, but it was, like, weird. It was, like, in the center. And then it was, like moving. It was, like, moving to, like, my lower abdominal area. And it was just so bizarre. And it wasn't, it just kept getting worse. Because, yeah. You know, like, when we have a bad stomach day, I don't know. It's kind of like roller coaster-y. Like,
yeah.
I'll take, you know, some meds that I have on hand, like those rescue meds to like kind of
usually
help.
You get a glimmer of hope.
Yes, somewhere. But it just kept getting worse. So I make it home, thankfully, and it was our Grayson night. So
yeah,
our hairdresser is a traveling hairdresser, and Grayson comes to our house, and we make a hair party out of it.
There's three of us. Like, yes. Get our hair done.
Yeah. So, and we have snacks and we have wine and we just hang out and we get our hair done at our house and it's amazing. And yeah. It's nights that we look forward to. It's essentially a nice girls' night and we walk out of there looking great.
Exactly.
So it is Grayson night and I'm just, the pain is getting worse and worse.
To your house, too.
It was at
where
my
you
house.
You were hosting.
I was hosting. So I'm like trying to get over the snacks and everything and I couldn't even drink wine. And you know when I
you
can't
know
drink
that's
wine,
a problem.
Something is terribly wrong.
Yeah. So, that's true.
So it was. So I think I ended up taking like an ibuprofen or Tylenol, which would help a little bit. But then when it wore off, it got so bad. So I could barely even. I think at one point you guys were in the kitchen and I went and sat on the couch and I was like dying. I couldn't even speak and I was doubled mm-hmm. over. So Rome, I think you told this already.
I called Dr. Kim.
Yes,
I did. I called the office. I spoke to one of the nurses and I'm like, here's what's going on with her. I'm a little concerned because it seems to be getting worse and she's like doubled over in pain right now. And then Dr. Kim called me back and he was like, you tell her right now, go to the ER. Right now, go to ER.
Okay, so he's saying go to the ER right now. I have a full head of foils. Like I am in the middle of getting my hair dyed. Like I am going to wait. So I waited until Grayson was totally, which was probably like another hour.
Well, we let you finish.
Right, yes.
You go first.
Yes.
And then I stayed back to like clean up
and do all
vacuum
the things.
And put all the food away after.
Yes. Well, after that phone call, Sean was like, Dr. Kitt said we need to go now. I'm like, oh, well, I'm not going to the ER with a set of foils in my hair getting highlights. I'm like, we have to finish this. So Grayson finished my hair. Sean took me to the ER. As soon as we got there, I had a wonderful experience. I went right in. They got me right back. At that point, I was doubled over. Like, I could barely even walk. Like, the pain was horrific. So they got me back there. They did a CAT scan and blood work, and it showed that I needed my appendix out. And I sat there, and I just cried. I just cried. You know that feeling. Mm-hmm. I did not want to have surgery. I didn't want to be cut open again. I didn't want to go through that again. Like, I just had my gallbladder out mm-hmm. not too long ago. I had knee surgery. I had surgery when I had a cyst removed from my ovary. So it just the thought of going under the knife again and the healing from it, it was just, I was upset. But it had to come out. It was diseased and it had to come out. And they said if I waited any longer, it might have burst.
Oh my God, yes.
So, but I can still remember just, you know, they obviously gave me meds, were getting me ready for surgery. And I remember going to the bathroom and I look in the mirror. I am haggard. I have bags. Makeup is streaming down my face. Like, I look like a mess, but my hair was so on point.
I was going to say, but your hair looked
My hair looked fantastic. Thanks, Grayson. And I feel like the nurse has even complimented me. So my hair looked like I was going out and my face and body looked like I was ready
dying.
For surgery. Yeah. So that was my appendix story. And you know what? Funny enough, I just feel like things always work as it should. My mom at the time did not live close to me. She lived in Saratoga Springs and she just was coming out to visit that next day. Mm-hmm. And I was never more grateful to have my mom come and, you know, be able to take care of me after surgery. But I do have to say, appendix surgery, recovering from that, cakewalk. I couldn't get over it. Like, after 2 days, I'm like, I can go out for a run. This is not bad at all. So I do feel like your appendix is that accessory organ, and the surgery really isn't that bad. They do it laparoscopically, suck that baby right out.
As long as you catch it before it bursts.
Right. And thankfully, I was able to get my hair done and completed.
Yeah.
And it did not burst.
If you had let, like, been like, oh, I have to get my hair done, and it had burst, I'm pretty sure Sean would have been like, no more hair nights, that's it.
I know, he definitely would have put a kibosh. He was so annoyed. Like, I feel like I could still picture him standing in the, like, waiting, the doorway waiting, like, are you serious right now?
And thank God there's no Connor at that time, because I was able to just, like, we all got our hair done. You guys were at the hospital. I cleaned up. I put everything away, and I just, like, locked up for the night.
Yeah. And when I got home, just could recover and feel better. So that was my appendix story. And, you know, I know we've talked about gratitude journaling before. And not only do I do that, but I also just kind of journal in general on different, like, quotes and affirmations. I journal about my future, my goals, desires, dreams. Like, I just find it very powerful. Just kind of like how you felt, you think about writing and expressing yourself, right? And releasing those memories and those feelings. And for me, when I journal, it just kind of helps me evoke those feelings that I will feel when I do manifest something or something does come to fruition. And like I said before, my favorite thing to write is, I trust and know that the right people are always making their way into my life. They always will. They always do. And I go back to Heather. I go back to you. Like, all the people that surround me, especially my coworkers, I just feel like I am so grateful to have such amazing people surround me, because we can't do this alone. We can't go on this chronic health illness journey by ourselves. And I'm just so lucky for the people I have in my life. So
yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like it's important to have those people too, not just that are there to support you, but who not just, I say believe you, but genuinely understand what you're going through. Like, they're not like, oh, here we go again.
Ew, she's sick again. Liar. Like, right? Because it is a lot to be friends with us. It really is. It is a roller coaster ride. We have highs and lows, as you're all learning. And just, it takes a special type of people to, support us and be there for us, you know? Yeah,
because being friends with us is kind of like riding a landslide. Like, one thing goes wrong, and then that thing turns into another thing, and then eventually, before you know it, everything's just flooding, and it's awful, and it's coming down. But eventually, the landslide ends.
Yes. All right. Like, what is the saying? What goes down must go down.
I don't know.
But it all in the end, we're moving forward and healing and taking care of ourselves and just doing it with a grateful heart.
Mm-hmm. And it brings me back to when I was talking about my rose before, with the follower who reached out to me and wanted to talk about things. And she's at that point in her journey right now where she's so scared, and, you know, she's like afraid that she wants to be there and see her daughters grow up, and will this disease progress into something that makes that not possible for her. And for those of you listening, and you're in the point in your journey where you feel that way, you feel like, am I going to die? Is this going to kill me? Because I've been there. Definitely I've been there. It's not. You just have to give it time. Time requires, for this stuff, you need time. You need to let your body adjust. When you have stuff like this, it takes so long for your body to get used to something, to accept something, to heal from something, and let time be on your side.
Yes, yes, and take care of you. Serve yourself, take care of yourself, get rest, you know, do what you need to do, because like we said when we started today, you cannot pour from an empty cup. Yep. You must take care of you, because when you take care of you, then you can take better care of the people around you.
That is true.
So, well, that is all we have for today.
Yes. So if you are enjoying what you are listening to, we would appreciate, you know, any positive reviews or likes or follows. You know, all that stuff just helps us reach more of you guys out there who need to hear these messages, who need to feel like you are not alone in this journey and that there are others out there like you. So,
and we're here for you.
We are here for you.
Thanks for tuning in.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.